Today's episode is brought to you by Slate House Publishing, recorded at Wayne Howard Studios.
Welcome to Slate House Publishing presents Lit Bits. I'm Jeremy. With me, as always, is Trevor and Curtis.
Hello.
Hey.
Today we are talking about our spring movie review. Mostly Trevor.
But I'm always the one who sees the movies. I don't
mostly
know why.
I wanted to see some of them, but I have, you know, a life. I'm just kidding. I'm totally kidding. No, this is our spring movie review. We saw the movies, so you don't have to. This is true for some of them, especially.
But for most of them.
Because that's how movies work.
You're right, yeah.
Don't go
watch them.
Yeah, don't go watch them.
I subjected my body to them, so you didn't.
So how about, what if we do like we did last time and let Curtis kind of read the
I feel like that works.
The list, and then we can just talk about them.
Yeah, that works.
They're not in any kind of order either. I think just wrote down
just whatever was there.
What we remembered.
Yep. I have watched about a quarter of one of these movies, so this is
nice.
Great.
Awesome.
I can do this.
Yeah.
Which quarter?
The first quarter.
the middle quarter.
20 minutes in.
I love it.
I saw the first quarter of The Batman. And I thought it was great.
The Batman is a fucking stellar movie. Let me tell you,
it was good. But I had to go do something. So
you know,
went back to it.
That movie, if he'd have walked a little bit faster, you would have actually seen about half of it.
You're right. Yeah.
He always walks so damn slow.
Let's be real. I'm gonna say two things here. Number one, I think that Batman The Batman is probably my favorite Batman movie since the 1966 Batman.
Really?
Interesting.
Yeah, I really do. I think this movie is amazing. I absolutely love Robert Pattinson's portrayal of Batman.
Yeah, me too.
I felt like the casting was just all around solid. I loved the script. It kept me entertained for 3 hours, which is something really hard to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But number two, he's objectively just the worst fucking Batman in terms of what he's able to accomplish. Watch that movie and tell me what that Batman actually does.
He makes a pun about a thumb drive.
But was that him making the fun or the pun? Because I feel like that was the Riddler making that pun.
Well,
he's just
commenting on the
reading
pun.
Reading the pun.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. Did you get to that part yet, or had he walked onto the screen yet?
No, I don't think I've gotten to the...
That's my biggest issue with the movie. It's like, it would have been 2 hours long if he'd have just walked a tad faster. Like, every minute, every
so
time
slowly.
He comes into screen, it's like 5 minutes of just hearing this clop, clop, clop.
He's got like spurs on.
You know what? My so far my favorite part of the movie is when I finally get back to it. I'm gonna really enjoy this even more. Is how he doesn't put on the Christian Bale voice. I don't like that.
No,
I did not.
I have made the Christian Bale voice joke with my partner. Just like. All the time. We went to see one of the movies together, I think it was. And there's like, you know, the part where he's like always barking like a dog. You know, he's always yelling. Like, my favorite part of The Dark Knight is when he yells like, "Where's Rachel? Where is she? He can't do it." Yeah. So I'm always laughing about that. And in the theater, of course, what should happen? But he's looking for whatever bomb trigger in that last one, and he's like, "Where is it? Where's the trigger?" And I just turned to Caitlin. I was like, "Where is it?"
I mean, I felt like I was getting trolled entirely when Bane started talking.
Oh.
I started looking around like, is anyone hearing this? Like,
he couldn't settle on an accent either. It's like it fluctuates between like Sean Connery and a Caribbean person. I love how we're supposed to be talking about the Batman and we go back to like another
movie.
All
of the other Batman movies.
Well, this is the reason why this Batman is cool, is because it didn't do any of that goofy shit. You know?
Yeah, you're right. When you got Robert Pattinson saying, "I'm Batman."
Yeah, I'm Batman, baby.
I'm Batman.
I've got
actually, no, that's not it.
He
literally,
so...
that's the second point. And I love this movie, too. To me, though, it wasn't the, you know, I wasn't so in love with the campy, like, 66 version. I did like the the 89, like the Tim Burton version. So, because
that's where it's at, dude.
I mean, that to me was like...
I liked Michael Keaton.
I liked Michael Keaton, especially because I remember like all the derisive kind of blowback against casting Michael Keaton at the time.
Yeah.
And just everyone saying, oh, this movie's going to suck. And then I go to see it in the theater and I'm like, no, this is freaking awesome.
It's because he was Beetlejuice.
But I do like this.
They thought it wasn't going to work.
Well, he was Beetlejuice and Mr. Mom, and he had a big comedic kind of career before he did that.
Yeah, how is this goofball going to be Batman?
Right.
Is kind of what they were like.
And so when I do like this one, it's up there with that one for me. So it's like you, it's tied. But my second problem with it, other than him walking so slow, is this whole deal of he's obviously dressed like a man in a bat suit, and yet I thought it was a joke at first because he's like, I'm vengeance. And that's great. That's fine. Okay, he wants to, you know, I'm vengeance. I'm a metaphor for this city or whatever. But then everyone's like, hey, vengeance, what's up? Hey, vengeance. Hey, there's vengeance walking in. And it's like, come on.
He becomes to be fair, I think it's only Zoe Saldana.
No, they all do.
Not Zoe Saldana. Zoe Kravitz.
No, they all do. All characters sit there and start calling him vengeance.
Maybe I just missed that. I'll have to.
Like, it bugged me.
I'll have to.
You're serious? To go back.
I'm serious. Yeah.
I don't recall that.
They all start calling him vengeance.
Rewatch
the movie. I just rewatched it on HBO
it
Max.
Sounds like they're clowning on him.
They're like,
oh,
hey, vengeance.
Vengeance is here.
Yeah, the Penguin calls him vengeance.
I mean, maybe it's just a prolonged dad joke.
Maybe it is. And you'd think I wouldn't be so angry at those, because I do dad jokes like all the time.
To be real, though, if you had the choice between calling Batman Batman or vengeance, I would probably call him vengeance, too. Because that is so much more threatening than fucking Batman.
I know. That's kind of the problem with Batman entirely, is that at the end of the day, he's dressed in a costume.
And this is why...
But that's the look some of the cops give him, too, when he's walking into the murder scene. And they're like,
that 66 Batman is my favorite Batman, because Batman is inherently ridiculous.
Yes, he
inherently ridiculous.
He's got little ears
sticking
up.
Honestly,
that's
so
silly.
Honestly,
he's such a dork.
Honestly, anybody could say that for any superhero.
Yeah.
You walk into a room dressed like...
That's
you know.
True. I mean, that's... All superheroes are patently ridiculous.
But
sure,
Batman
sure.
is the, Batman is the only one out of all those that tries to go
I think what drives me crazy
serious.
Is that, like...
I don't know.
Exactly.
I mean, like, the Punisher, like, a lot
the room,
of them.
When Thor walks in the room, it's like, all right, that's fucking Thor. Like, you know, like, Thor's here to party. Like,
I mean, I'd still make fun of him if he wasn't so buff. Like, he could just... Punch
but Thor
me through a
makes
wall.
Fun right. of himself. Like, Thor doesn't take himself so self-seriously.
He's a comic book character.
No, but Robert Pattinson, I think, plays this Batman really well because he's super awkward. Like, he's a Batman with social anxiety. Like, he just stands in the corner. He never looks at anybody straight on. He's always sitting at, like, a cantered angle. Like,
he's like an anxious millennial Batman.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, he really is.
He's being played by one.
No, I love this movie. I think this movie is amazing. I also think that, just again, when I look at the plot, I'm like, man, Batman does a whole lot of fucking nothing.
Yeah.
He does a lot of raging. He does a lot of punching. He does a lot of chasing people.
The fights were kind of cool.
Yeah, the fights were really
reactive.
Cool.
Something I pointed out to my wife when we were watching it is that when he, in the George Clooney Batman, right, he's surrounded by like 20 guys.
Right.
And he's just artfully kicking each one of their asses. Like, they just happen to not hit him yet by the time he turns around. It's clearly choreographed and campy.
Yeah.
But in this one, he's surrounded by like more guys than anybody could reasonably handle in a fight. But they're not like, it's not like choreographed in a goofy way. They're actually like, they like hit him in the back with a baseball bat.
Mm-hmm. And you see him kind of react and bend down.
Yeah, he's
and,
like, oh shit, I got hit. And then he turns around and punches the guy out. But it's not like choreographed. His armor just does a good enough job.
Yeah.
To where he's not injured by each one
really
of the hits.
It really sold me on the whole idea of, like, this dude has a lot of money, and he's put a lot of money into the stuff to keep him going.
Right, he's to get those wonderful
there's like
toys.
There's a whole scene where he's trying to take down some mobsters, and they've got machine guns, and they're shooting him. And, like, they're clearly hitting him. They're blasting him. But he just tears through it
because
his suit is
much
better.
Yeah, instead of making him like a karate master, which is ridiculous.
Well, like it just begs the question, like, how does Batman not get shot constantly?
Right.
And this one was like, well, you know what? He's got armor. That's why
he is
getting
like 100
times.
I mean, to be fair, this
constantly.
Isn't the only one. Like, even the Michael Keaton Batman in 89 mentions the fact that he has armor on. That's the first thing they say, because they all thought he was like, they're all playing it up like he's some sort of supernatural creature, and then he falls to the ground and they all shoot him and they stand back and they start examining him. And they're like, oh, wait, it's some kind of body armor.
Every Batman has had some kind of body armor.
Right.
So I
feel like we haven't seen this represented on screen as cogently as with this one.
This one begs the question, like that first Batman does, that the Joker asks, where does he get these wonderful toys? And at least with the Nolan Batman, we do have an answer. Like, we know he's got this armorer who works with that helps him design this stuff. I mean, at one point in the Batman, he takes his motorcycle or his car or something, and he goes under this long subway tunnel and then down and finally into like his bat cave, and it's all like technologically designed with like all this like tricked out. Yeah. And it's like, who the fuck built this? Like,
I don't think it matters though.
If we're going for realism, or if we're going to promote this idea that it's a realistic kind of portrayal, then yeah, that's a question we need to be asking.
You're promoting realism.
If you're going to sit there and argue to me, oh, because I've seen that argument on Twitter and on social media, like, this is the most realistic portrayal of Batman. And I'm like, who the fuck built that big thing then?
It's not the most realistic portrayal of Batman.
No.
But that's also because there is a realistic portrayal of Batman would just be, dude gets fucking shot in his spine and then dies. Like, that's a realistic interpretation of Batman.
Well, that's, I keep going back to the Nolan films, because that was Nolan's whole point, was how can I make this guy real? How can I?
And I dislike the Nolan films because I feel like the whole question of like, how can we ground this character? No, fuck that. You don't ground the character by making the rules more clear. You ground the character through the characterization. You play with themes, you play with tone, you play with, you know, motifs. That's what you do. That's how you ground the character. You make the character make believable choices in the world that you've set out for him.
And I feel like this Batman does.
This movie does that incredibly well.
Because that to me too, that's, speaking of the Nolan films, that's my biggest complaint, is he's very reactive in the Nolan films. Like, somebody tells him something and that becomes his mantra, whether it's Ra's al Ghul or Rachel Dawes or somebody. They're like, oh, this is what you should think. And he's like, this is what I think. And it's, it's like, have a mind for yourself, dude.
Right. Yeah. This Batman is really, really reactive. But I think that, like, in large part, superhero stories are very reactive. What does proactive justice look like? I mean, it doesn't look like punching a dude in the face.
Well, he refers to the proactive justice in the prologue there at the beginning of the movie. He talks about how he's been out and how he doesn't go out every night, and he's doing that voiceover.
Well, his idea of a proactive justice is to make a so violent a statement against the people that do break the law that they end up not breaking the law because
they have to see is like his light in the sky, and they're like, oh, he's somewhere out there.
But he realizes that does not affect real change. It's just a measure, right?
Well, it becomes his character arc.
Character arc is at the end of the movie, he realizes, like, I am a symbol. And I, as symbol, can take action to inspire others to take action.
I need to be more than vengeance.
That is proactive justice.
Right.
I need to change my name from Vengeance to Proactive Man.
Proactive.
Yeah. He's Activia.
He's very regular.
All right, all right. That's enough on X.
X.
I didn't see this.
I did.
I'm sorry.
This movie is excellent. Like, this is a really, really great movie. When I saw it the first time, I didn't know. You've seen it more than once? Well, okay. After I saw it, there was like a period where I was like, I don't know if I liked this. And I had to really think about it and ruminate on it before I came back around and was like, actually, you know what? I can see what this dude was going for, what he was doing, and why I think this movie is actually so much better than the criticism it gets. It's a horror movie about a group of like young people who go out to this farm in Texas. Stop me if you've heard this before. They go to a farm in Texas, but they go out to make a porn movie, like a Debbie Does Dallas sort of thing.
Oh, right. Okay.
And they end up on this farm of this old people, or this old couple, and the old couple are not able to have sex together, and the old woman,
because they're old.
Because they're old. The old woman still has just like this uncontrollable libido. And so the horror movie kind of starts when we start to understand like she's really the right? The monster is her sexuality. She's like predating on.
I think Curtis has his phone out looking this up.
I want to look at posters and stuff.
It's a crazy movie. So the movie I think is trying to have a conversation about the way that we view human sexuality, especially as we view human sexuality in old age, and so
didn't the Golden Girls already do this?
I don't care about the Golden Girls.
The Golden Girls already talked to us about how old age handles sexuality.
I'm just saying,
it's like Papa Viagra,
like putting it
good to go,
and we're done.
Sorry, Trevor.
You disappoint me.
I do. I know. Well, then it's a Saturday. It's just another day of the week. If I manage to
X, no, she's got a hatchet.
Yeah. It's honestly a phenomenal movie. I mean, it balances that line between like a genuine like art house kind of film trying to provoke a real discussion while also being like a sleazy exploitation film. It works in a way viscerally that I think more horror should seek to emulate, but it's not just all gross outs for no reason, right?
I could ruminate all over that.
Seriously, I think this is really smart horror, and I really can't wait to see more horror like it. I think there was a brief conversation around this movie where people were talking about, I don't like it because it seems like it's just being gross about old people. Like it's being very ageist against old people.
Right.
And I thought that at first too, because I felt like, you know, the horror of course is like these old people who are having sex and they want to kill these young people. But I think that it's really almost an inspection of like our attitudes about aging and our attitudes about the way that we think of old people, and especially the way that we think of intimacy between old people, right? I think our attitudes inform as much of the horror here. And there are some moments that I think are really, really tender, and it's weird to see a movie that plays with this idea of like a tenderness in a horror film.
Right.
It's just, about porn. It's really smart. It's very smartly crafted.
I'll have to check that out.
Yeah, we'll check it out.
Yeah.
Curtis, sit down with the kids. Watch that.
Yeah. Come on, family. Let's, yeah.
What's next?
Really, truly a family values movie.
Uma.
Thurman.
Uma.
Thurman.
Uma?
Thurman is not in that film. This film stars Dylan McDermott, who is a poor man's Dermot Mulroney. No, it stars Dermot Mulroney, who's a poor man's Dylan McDermott. That's the joke.
Oh, okay.
That's the joke. And Sandra Oh, who Sandra always Oh. looks like she's like saying "Oh," like with her face.
She does always look a little bit
she
surprised.
She always looks surprised in everything I've seen.
I'm
her
glad
in.
You worked out that joke like live.
I thought so I had before. It down. I always think I have it down, and I don't.
Dylan he's the poor. Hold on, the poor man's.
So let me workshop this.
The poor man's Matt Dillon. Wait.
They're both the poor man's Matt Dillon. Dermot Mulroney is the poor man's Dylan McDermott.
Matt Dillon is the poor man's Matt Dillon. But yeah, anyway, Uma, what is this movie about?
This movie is about a... Thurman. It's a movie about a mom who is going through some stuff. I mean, help me out. It's a ghost story.
It's a Korean ghost story. She can't be around. She's raising her daughter totally off the grid.
Right.
Because she can't be around electricity.
Because of the trauma that she suffered.
Because of the trauma that she suffered.
Yeah. She's trying to figure out how to raise her daughter.
And her uncle comes
in a different way.
Right. And her mother just died, and her uncle comes to bring her her mother's ashes and like her mother's things too, right?
Her mother's remains for a proper burial.
Right.
And she refuses to do that because her mother was so abusive. And she has to reconcile the way in which her mother abused her. Although also try to understand that the abuse wasn't necessarily out of a desire to harm so much as an inability to understand the divide between her personal needs and what her child needed.
And to make sure I get it right, I'm going to say it like this. And Dermot McDermott is just her friend that I just combined both names.
I was like, I don't think that's right.
I'll just combine both names.
He really just doesn't have much of a role in this
movie. He doesn't, no. He snarls at things, really, which is what he's done his entire career.
It's really
he
the, kinda, only the two actresses. It's Sandra Oh and then the
daughter.
The daughter character.
Who's played like a high school kid, but didn't she? Didn't we decide she's like 20-something or 30?
She's well into her 20s.
Would you describe this as a horror or a thriller?
It's a horror movie. It's
psychological, kind of?
I think
I guess supernatural. It does have supernatural elements.
I think the best way for me to describe this movie is basically a paint-by-numbers character-driven horror movie. There's so much about it that I want to like, because it is very character-driven, and I think it does do service to its message. But I think that the way that it does service to its message is also so pedestrian. It's just so uninteresting.
Yeah.
It really is just a paint-by-numbers horror
movie. The ghost is a little bit unusual just because it's another cultural interpretation of like a spirit or something. Right. But other than that, it's meh.
It really was just a very bland movie.
Siskel and Ebert had two thumbs up or whatever, and we've got meh.
I haven't seen
it. Did they, though? I felt like it was not very well received critically.
Well, no, I'm not saying they would have given it two thumbs up. I mean, that's their ratings.
I see.
Their rating
we've
thing.
Just got like, we've got like an we got, eh and a
yeah,
meh.
Eh, meh.
Oh, really?
Turning Red.
So Turning Red is kind of the...
It was a horror movie, man. It was very scary. It's
terrifying.
It was in an action thriller starring Bruce Willis. Can I make that joke? I can't make that joke.
All about coming of age, adolescence.
Bruce Willis. What movie are you referencing?
I'm just fucking up a movie. Go ahead, tell us what you're.
Quit.
You're the only one.
Bruce Willis was not in Turning Red, just for the record.
Bruce Willis is not in Turning. All right,
Sandra Oh is in Turning Red.
Is she?
Yeah, she really is.
Did they draw her character's face as like surprised?
Is it like
no? I wish they did though. In retrospect, yeah.
So tell us about Turning Red. I'm sorry.
I mean, what's interesting about this movie is that Uma came out right around the same time that Turning Red did. And it's basically the same story. And yet Turning Red is so much better because it's still about like motherhood. It's still about the relationship between a mother and her daughter. And very specifically, I think in this case, an Asian mother and her Asian American, or in this case, Asian Canadian daughter.
Right.
And it's all just, you know, again, going back through the same cycle of like trying to understand this strained relationship that a child has with their mother. But it's also a coming of age story. Like the main character in this movie turns into like a red panda, which I think can be allegorized for a number of things.
This movie received a lot of backlash from critics.
White critics. Because white critics are
critical,
shit
like,
at like critically reading movies.
Yeah. My impression was it was a bunch of, like a bunch of crazy moms that were mad about it.
A lot of
conservatives got mad about this because there's
a joke about
having a period, because God forbid a girl who's coming of age has to deal with getting her period.
Yeah.
Oh no.
That's not
shock.
A
shock.
That's not something that happens in the world.
To every fucking woman in the world.
Yeah.
Oh no. I get so mad about this stuff because it's so ignorant and just idiotic, you know, like we need human stories that represent the diaspora of our lives. And if we continue to just hide away from the things that are super impactful in a person's life, then what's the point of storytelling?
We might not end up being able to talk about anything. Oh, wait, that's where we are.
it's
welcome
just
back
exhausting.
To the 1950s.
Yeah, no joke.
It really
the parents
is
on the TV show have to sleep in two separate twin beds.
I'm like, dude, of all the things to get up in arms about, Turning Red?
It's so stupid.
Yeah.
So, but this movie, I think, is really genuinely heartfelt. It takes some of the same theme of Uma, and explores it in a different context, this time an animated comedy. Yeah. But it also has a lot to say about trying to understand who you are through a process of maturation, right?
Yeah.
It's as a coming of age story, it is a lot about finding yourself. And the metaphor, the central metaphor of this girl turning into this like red panda, I think is brilliant. Because you can use that for puberty. You can use that into a kind of coming into awareness for right. yourself. It can also be allegorized as queerness, as a kind of coming out or
it's a catch-all trying to framing device.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Whether it be understanding your sexuality or understanding the physical process of maturation that you go through.
Whatever.
Understanding how you differentiate yourself from your parents in this like moment of individualization.
Right.
Brilliant movie. Yeah. I think it's so great, and it succeeds at everything it wants to do in a way that I felt Uma didn't, because it dares to be a little bit bolder. It dares to do something really unique,
which is amazing because this is a Pixar movie,
right?
And the other one had full right. license to go right. as far as they wanted to.
Exactly.
That's strange.
Yeah.
That's strange that the Pixar movie went further.
Yeah. But it's a great movie, and I really loved it. And I think that if you're the kind of person who watches Pixar movies and really wants to watch a coming-of-age story about a girl who turns into a red panda,
well done.
Watch it. It's a good movie. It's cool. Really well-crafted.
Cool. So what's next on our list?
Dudes, we get to talk about Morbius.
Oh. It's a me. It's a Jared Leto. It's a Jared Leto again. They keep on giving me parts.
I'm a vampire now.
Can you believe
real blood?
I keep getting roles in movies. I don't know how.
They keep casting me.
They just
excuse
call me.
Excuse me. I need to go to the bathroom.
He never asked.
A page. Will you wheel me into the bathroom? I can't use my legs for this movie.
You think he's joking, folks, but no, that was actually
a
concern. That was a real thing.
Oh, great. He's method
he's
acting.
He's the fucking worst. This movie.
This movie.
Oh, my God. I swear I only go to Jared Leto movies so I can go off the fucking deep end. Whether it be House of Gucci, like this movie almost makes me madder than Moonfall.
Did he do one movie that is like good? I can't think of one Jared Leto movie
where
he
was in
Requiem
for a Dream.
Okay,
and yeah. I liked that movie a lot.
Yeah, a lot of people liked that movie.
Yeah,
that's fair. I forgot
he was
in that.
He's a garbage person and a garbage actor, and this is a garbage movie. This movie is so fucking terrible. There's an actual line in this movie where Morbius is concocting the thing that's gonna kill his nemesis. His nemesis, by the way, named Milo. That's not even his real name. This movie bothers me so much. But he's going to kill his antagonist, who is just himself but evil. Just so right. stupid. And he goes to find him, and he crafts this like weird like syringe full of poison or something, and he's like, it's gonna kill him. So he's talking about like how it turns the blood to like mud or something. I don't even know. I can't remember. It's so unimportant. But he's like, I'm gonna inject this, and he's describing what the poison does, and he's like, in bats it's lethal, in humans it's deadly. I'm
like, Jesus.
Like, talk about just the quintessential bullshit of this script and why this script is so bad.
Explain to me the difference between just, lethal and deadly.
Yeah, this is just a small microcosm of the many problems.
Dr. Morbius, you passed med school?
Right. Are you sure you're an actual doctor?
I'm brilliant.
And I speak to bats. Lethal. Oh my God. I couldn't.
Lethal just means he's mostly dead. He's not elevated. He's just mostly dead.
Have fun invading the sewers. Storming the sewers.
I wish that were a part in the movie.
Morbius.
Oh my gosh. Beautiful. Can we recast this movie with Billy Crystal?
With Billy Crystal as
Morbius.
As you know what? Billy
Morbius
Crystal,
Max as Morbius.
Billy Crystal
Max.
can play all the parts.
Yeah.
He can play Morbius, he can play Morbius's useless girlfriend.
I was like trying to bust out a Billy
Crystal. Carol Kane needs to be the girlfriend then, if he's gonna be the
No, this movie is absolute like hot garbage. I was like, you know what? Maybe the special effects and the fight scenes would be better. Nope. Those are even terrible. I swear to God, the third act, I couldn't tell you what the fuck happened in the third act. Somehow they start fighting. I guess they punch each other through the sewers. I didn't realize that they punched each other into the sewers until after the movie, when Morbius exits the sewers and was like, oh, so that's where they went.
I can tell you what, the last bar fight I got into on Dixon, that, you know, that sucks. You get punched into the sewer and you're just like, where am I?
Dude, that's some straight Mortal Kombat shit. Yeah, it's
ridiculous.
You go through a lot of concrete when that happens.
He's got vampire powers, but somehow also controls bats. I don't know what the fuck his powers are. Nobody knows what his powers are. It's so useless. It's such a worthless
movie.
It
sounds like it's on par with a Jared Leto movie.
And the thing that bothers me is, like, nobody was clamoring.
You say like he's his vampire powers, but also controls bats. And I just imagine him like swooping into a game and like picking up the bat that the runner is just like a baseball game.
I would have watched that movie. I would have watched that movie.
This one is corked. No.
You know what? Screenplay idea. Vampire bat. It's about a vampire who plays baseball.
Vampire bat boy.
I'm so ready. Dude.
Are you writing this down?
I'm writing.
You're just talking. Yeah, write it down.
We've got it recorded, man. We've got it recorded.
We'll
I am going to.
We'll cast Jared Leto in all the roles.
The Lost City.
I went to see it, but I couldn't find it.
Trevor's like, yeah, well done, dude.
That explains everything.
The Lost City. Starring whom?
Sandra Bullock.
Sandra Bullock.
In this movie. Brad Pitt's in this movie.
Channing Tatum.
Channing Tatum's in this movie. It's about an author who writes a book about she's like a fantasy, or not a fantasy, she's like a romance adventure author. She gets kidnapped by
boomers and early Daniel Gen Xers. Radcliffe. If you've ever watched Romancing the Stone,
Romancing the Stone.
Gotcha.
It's totally Romancing the Stone. But anyway, she gets kidnapped by Daniel Radcliffe to go find this like secret treasure, and her cover model, who's Channing Tatum, goes to rescue her. And it's absolutely hilarious.
I think it's really, really funny.
It plays with a lot of the common tropes that I think we've seen in romance movies, like romantic comedies, but it also subverts a lot of those expectations. And I think it's a lot of fun. Like, I had a lot of fun watching it.
Cool. You know what's funny is on the poster, you know, they're like walking and her dress is all ripped up and they're dirty and lost looking. And he's got one of those travel neck pillows around his neck.
Yes.
I think that's great. Because he's looking all muscly and tough, but he's like...
It's really hilarious.
I like to be comfortable too.
And the physical comedy in this movie, I think, is tremendous. Because Sandra Bullock is a phenomenal comedic actress. And she really understands like how to deliver comedy, and
true for Speed 2 Cruise Control.
Oof. I also really like Channing Tatum. I think that he understands physical comedy extremely well.
He's really funny.
Yeah.
And his physical comedy in this movie is like just super on point. So even though I don't think that this movie is anything like extraordinarily special, I also felt like, no, this was a good time. I really had a lot of fun with it. And there were a couple of jokes that had me like howling. They were really funny.
Nice.
Especially
which
Brad
I miss
Pitt.
Going to see that in the theater, because seeing Trevor howl in the theater is just it's a sight to be seen.
It's worth the price of
admission.
Yeah.
He does.
That's so funny. Woo. Yeah, it's great.
It goes from a laugh to a straight up wolf howl.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
beautiful.
It's only then that, you know, he starts cleaning himself, then you just don't want to.
Then everybody clears out.
Oh, no, you definitely got to leave movies, like in between that, you know, the
movie's over.
Laughter, the howling.
That's
laughter.
Why he's got the movie pass, because he has to go back several
yeah,
times.
That's right, yeah.
To try
I'm constantly having to, like, excuse myself.
How many times does Channing Tatum take his shirt off in this movie?
I think like maybe a couple times.
Okay, so yeah. that's not.
I mean, that's why like you show huge... up, right? You don't cast Channing Tatum not to take his shirt off.
Honestly, I don't
that's
show
true.
I
Although they do make a joke. They make a, I do. What's wrong with you?
I guess a lot, then. I'd show up for Sandra Bullock.
He looks like he smells good.
There's totally a joke at the beginning of the movie where the women in the audience are asking him to take his shirt off, and he's like, I don't want to take my shirt off. Like he's like really tired of he's the like whole like take your shirt off thing.
He's like yeah. a zoo animal.
Yeah, yeah.
On display. Like,
yeah, he's
so
like,
tired.
I don't want to do this today.
It's not what it used to be, guys.
Yeah.
All right.
It's great.
All right, cool. So what's next?
Sonic 2. Sonic the Hedgehog, I presume.
Okay. Sonic the Hedgehog.
No, this is the Restaurant Wars against Arby's, Burger King,
I've been waiting
and
for
McDonald's.
That movie. I've been waiting so long for that movie.
That cinematic universe is going to be amazing. KFC. He was a fucking colonel.
Yeah, yeah. Who's going to win that fight? The colonel or the clown? Ooh. Or the fucking Burger King, whatever he is with the...
Okay, well, the Burger King can raise an army, so, like, let's
yeah.
be...
Yeah,
the colonel runs real. The army, though.
Look at the Burger King's yeah. face. He's a psycho. I wouldn't mess with
he
that
He is
guy.
A psycho.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
dude sneaks into people's houses at night.
Yeah.
That face just says, I'll fucking kill you.
Yeah. Okay, so yes, we're talking Sonic. About Sonic the Hedgehog 2.
Not Sonic Drive-In, the Sonic the Hedgehog 2.
Which
so,
doesn't have its own mascot, so it'd be the
really
first to go.
As a 90s kid with Sega Genesis, Sonic meant just as much to me as Mario did. So.
Yep. Yeah.
But I haven't seen these movies, but it looks like a ton of fun.
Sonic the Hedgehog 1 was a surprise hit for me. I didn't expect to enjoy that movie nearly as much as I enjoyed it.
Nice.
And when I walked away, I was like, I mean, the cynic in me knows that that movie's dog shit, right?
Right, right.
Because there's so much... the first movie is just egregious product placement. Like they stop the entire plot to be like, let me introduce you to the Olive Garden. Like, it's...
oh, shit.
It's ridiculous, the plot...
That's not even a good plug.
The product... No, the product placement is
so... It reminds
so
me of Wayne's World when they're spoofing that. And they're, like, all sitting there in their outfits.
Yeah,
and like,
but imagine if... Imagine if the movie were sincere about it. That's how
awful.
Sonic the Hedgehog 1 felt. It was a movie that 9-year-old me would have been like, fucking let's go. And like I would have all of that product placement on 9-year-old me would have worked.
My
parents would be like, we're thinking of moving, and I'd be like, have you checked out Zillow? That's what Sonic the Hedgehog uses. Zillow.
You can get a Zestimate.
Yeah, yeah. We're gonna go out for dinner. Are we gonna go to the Olive Garden? Because I hear that they have great breadsticks.
Like, we shouldn't have let him watch that movie.
Yeah,
he's got so many ideas about where to go.
The second movie, though, I think that I really enjoyed a lot more of Jim Carrey's performance in this movie.
Right.
He was so very fun to watch.
His final performance, apparently. He's retired now.
That's kind of what I guess we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
But he's such a joy to watch, and he's so funny in this movie. I think his performances are just manic, and he steals the scene every time he's in a scene. Otherwise, you know, I felt like, again, like 9-year-old me would have looked at this movie and been like, this is the best fucking movie that's ever been made.
Well, because 9-year-old you was watching Jim Carrey movies.
Well,
and
not only
and
that, but
reacted
like,
that way every time.
9-year-old
right?
me was obsessed with Sonic the Hedgehog. You know,
right,
like
right,
I
right.
would have been that mm-hmm. kid who was like front row seats, just like in awe. You
You're
know,
like,
I mean?
Dude, Sonic the Hedgehog,
yeah.
Jim Carrey,
yeah.
the Olive Garden.
Right, yeah.
All
Zillow.
Of my favorite
all
things.
Of my favorite things.
Zillow, yeah.
Zillow.
I'm just sitting there like, oh man, I can't wait to get some noodles later.
Knuckles is in this movie. Oh what? My gosh! They make reference to the Chaos Emeralds.
Like,
throw in Toys R Us, and I mean, you'd watch it 24/7.
Yeah,
Jim is.
I would have been all over it at 9 years old. Yeah, as no an doubt. Adult, I can look at it and I'm kind of like, this feels less dog shit than the other movie was.
Right. Right. Why did everybody?
I had a good time with it.
Everybody though. Reacted so much to the teeth. To the oh my Sonic god! The Hedgehog's
well, that's
teeth.
Because Sonic the Hedgehog's teeth in the first trailer, the original trailer, were real nightmare fuel. like for whatever really? Reason, yeah, the animators tried to like anthropomorphize Sonic more than a cartoon character, and so like tried
he's got,
to make
like,
him look
showing.
Yeah, he's just creepy. There's an uncanny weird. Valley sort of thing where you look at this weird fucking hedgehog abomination, and it looks. You remember that meme of like the fucked up looking fox that's sitting on a chair, and he just looks like that fox has been doing meth for like the last 20 years.
Yeah,
that's what the original Sonic. That he looked like a weird methed out runner dude, and it just doesn't work.
Let's be honest,
more.
Get a hedgehog to run that fast, you're going to have to meth him up.
Right, they're very slow.
For yeah. sure. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, how else are you going to get blue skin?
Drinking colloidal silver.
I want to see that Sonic the Hedgehog where he comes in, he's like all twitching and he's like, yeah, yeah, and he just can't sit still and he's itching everything. Like
somehow Jim Carrey is the calmer of the two. Yeah. Yeah. So were the teeth less weird in the second movie?
Oh, yeah, because he's a cartoon. Okay. He's a cartoon in the first movie and the second movie. The complaints about the Sonic the Hedgehog were from the first movie in the movie that was never released because their first cut had this abomination Sonic, and they pushed the release date for that movie back almost like a year so they could redo all of the animation.
I thought that it was released that way. That's weird.
No, it was.
They actually changed all of it.
I'm sure there's a cut out there with like the unchanged Sonic that just looks like a fucking nightmare landscape.
Oh, weird. They were just having too much fun with
the new Sonic
design.
looks like a cartoon character, and it works. I think it works much better as a cartoon character.
I bet my kid would really like to watch that. My 8-year old.
They're fun movies. I'm not going to say they're
your little boy probably would
they're
too.
Not
probably
intellectual.
If he sits and watches, I don't know if he's at that age yet where he's kind of sees the television.
Yeah, he's not even two, but yeah, he can stand there and just kind of like drool while he watches.
They're not intellectually.
That's what I do.
Profound.
So there you go.
There you go. Yeah. That's the first one. All right, the next movie is it's just a bunch of letters. That's right, Trevor. That's what he says.
Who let in that cat with mange?
This is the whole rest of the episode.
Trevor went from howling with laughter to meowing.
Yeah, meowing. You never know.
We're brainstorming this list of movies we'd seen prior to recording, and he tells me this title, and instead of writing it down, I just jot the letters.
I was like trying to decipher it's an acronym.
It stands for Everything, Everywhere, All at Once.
Oh yes, right. This movie.
But when it's shortened, it becomes
meow,
which I feel like is a perfectly it fits totally with what the movie's doing too.
That's the sound they make in the butt plug scene, right?
Yes.
Yeah. All right.
There is a butt plug scene in this movie. No, this movie is utterly brilliant. It's so funny. It's so poignant. It has something to say, and it says it in such a bizarre way.
It is an
outrageous movie, and it is so beautifully done. I have never been to a movie with a butt plug scene that still made me cry at the end.
I've never seen a movie with a butt plug scene, let alone just comedically not watching
the right movie.
I think if I saw a movie, I saw anything with butt plug, I'd start crying.
Oh no. What have I signed up for?
That's the sound you would make.
Yow!
Yow!
Yow! Yow!
Everything, everywhere, all the time!
particularly my ass.
Where did the movie touch you?
I don't want to talk about it. Yow.
Yow.
All right. So, I mean, we talked about that it's serious, before, right?
None of these jokes would be out of context within this movie. I mean, this movie really is very irreverential in its style of humor.
It looks like they did a really good job of playing on the multiverse
smart,
thing.
For a movie with butt plugs in it, it really is very intelligently, masterfully crafted. One of my favorite scenes is...
And that's just a butt plug.
Yeah.
That's just
there's a scene where she goes into an alternate universe and she realizes like everyone in that universe has hot dogs for fingers. And so it envisions an entire culture that must have developed around hot dog fingers. And so you have these actors like Jamie Lee Curtis is it Michelle Yao?
The lead, right? Is she the lead?
Yeah, the lead.
Yeah.
Of this movie.
I think it is Michelle Yao.
Or Yo, or however you say it. I'm not trying
That's
to
our
be,
impeccable I'm, research.
I'm not trying to be
coming,
out,
coming to the
like,
forefront.
Like, oh, Yo? Yeah, Yo.
Yeah, Yo. I'm not trying to be disrespectful in how we pronounce it, but these very serious actors, you know, like actors with real prestige, and they're like traipsing around their bedroom and slapping their hot dog fingers against their thighs. It's so fucking funny. It's so outrageous. And I can't believe that this movie exists and also wants to have like a serious conversation about like the what like our existential existence like in this universe and like the many choices that we make that lead us to becoming a person. You know, like it's so beautifully profound. And yet nice. Also deeply, deeply stupid. And I love that. I love that we can have an intellectual conversation that really does hit you in the gut with just how much heavy lifting it's asking you to do spiritually.
Right.
While also fucking, like, fingering each other's mouths with hot dog fingers. It's so... funny. It's
oh my god.
It's a stellar
movie.
I mean,
the first time I saw anybody play off of the multiverse thing was Family Guy, and those were my favorite episodes is when they did anything time travel multiverse related. Uh-huh. I loved it. And then after that came Rick and Morty, which is basically completely centered around multiverse stuff. And it just like the concept of using that concept is so you can go anywhere, you can do anything.
Right.
There's nothing's off limits.
Yeah.
That's from a writer's perspective when you're using the multiverse theory.
I didn't know I needed to see a scene where Jamie Lee Curtis is a professional wrestler. I didn't know I needed to see that in my life, but I did. And it's I'm telling you, this movie is something
that's
really
special. That sounds off the wall on its own.
It is off the wall, but that's great. I absolutely adore it.
Cool.
It's a real cinematic treat.
Cool.
Yow.
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 One for the road, right? The Northman. The Northman?
The Northman.
It sounds like you're saying Norseman with a lift.
Yeah, a little bit.
The Northman.
A little bit, yeah. Not out of character for this movie either.
The Northman.
I wanted to see this movie, like, I just really wanted to see it. And again, I got lost on the way to the theater.
Yeah. You went south instead of north?
I did.
The Southman.
that's just about
this movie's just full of shit, man.
That's it was just a feedlot. It was a big
I show up, there's cows and nothing else.
This movie I think is very polarizing with the people who have seen it. Some of them really like it, some of them don't like it.
The Northman is polarizing.
It looks like Nicole Kidman.
It is Nicole Kidman.
And Ethan Hawke.
Yeah, Alexander Skarsgård.
And And no, that's not Legolas. Not Legolas. Aragorn.
No,
right?
It's not.
Is that not Aragorn?
No.
What's that guy's name?
Viggo Mortensen.
Yeah, the driver of the car movie. Viggo Mortensen. Yeah.
Yeah.
You just confused a lot of people. It's like Aragorn. There was no cars with Aragorn.
Cars.
Yeah, he was
hot
talking
dog.
About his the Green Book. Yeah.
All right. Yeah, nobody's
it's
got
me, Jared Leto.
Nobody's got it.
It's me.
No, Jared Leto is not in this movie.
Jared Leto starring in Yow.
If he is in this movie, they buried him in cosmetics.
So the people, what people may not realize about The Northman, because I know Trevor went to see it, I didn't, but I want to get my smart guy facts out there real quick, is that this is the legend that Shakespeare based the play Hamlet on. This is where he drew his inspiration for his play Hamlet.
Okay, all right.
So one of the biggest problems I have with the people who watched this movie and then were critical about it is it seems to me they missed the entire fucking point.
Feels like that with The Green Knight, too, like when we watched
that.
Oh,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So I've heard a lot of takes that are like, I didn't really enjoy The Northman so much. It was too predictable. I'm like, what do you mean it was predictable? It's one of the world's oldest fucking stories. Like, this is just... It's just Hamlet.
It's predictable.
Like, how can you tell me that something's predictable when we're talking
great.
About something
another
that has
story
been
where
circulating for
kills
thousands
his brother
of
and the
years.
Son comes back for revenge.
Yeah, there's an antagonist and a protagonist. We
right.
get it.
Oh, yeah.
We get it.
Yeah. You mean Hamlet dies in the end? Fucking of course. Have you not seen this play? It's taught in every high school.
I was like, yeah, did you not go to high school?
Although surprisingly, I was in the movie with my partner, and I looked at her and I said, you know what's going to happen, right? Because she was like really afraid for Amleth, the main character.
Yeah.
And she looks at me and she's like, I have a feeling this isn't going to end well. And I looked at her and I was like, are you joking right now?
Because that is a pretty good joke.
I mean, in that in of itself, I mean, that's not exactly a thought-provoking anagram, is it? Amleth to Hamlet?
No,
I mean, you
it's
just take the
just
H at the
Hamlet.
End and move the H to the beginning.
But, I mean, Hamlet was just renamed from Amleth to begin with.
Exactly. That's all Shakespeare did. He's
my gosh.
What if I move the H here?
Yeah. Shakespeare is
not... he's Danish.
Shakespeare is not nearly as clever as people think he is.
No, I mean, he's good, but...
He's good.
You're right. Yeah.
No, I know.
This movie is so fun, though. I really like this movie. It's weird, and it reminds me of the 1981 Conan the Barbarian. It feels like if this movie were just 30 years old, it would be the same as the Conan the Barbarian.
I don't think people realize just how weird that movie was.
That movie was fucking
weird. James Earl Jones turns into a giant snake.
And I think what this movie and what this movie does really well is it takes the weirdness of Norse mythology and it just kind of goes with it.
Right, right.
Bjork shows up in this movie.
Of course.
Is she the one that's like got the headpiece on?
Yeah, she's like this weird fortune teller.
I mean,
seer.
How can you make a movie like this and not have Bjork?
You can't.
Does she do the soundtrack too?
It was inevitable.
Dude, when I read Bjork was in this, you know what my first thought was? They probably had to like film her on her own, like in its own little context, because I cannot imagine her getting involved with the other actors. And
it feels like that, for sure. It's such a weird,
like the actors. Nobody else in the movie met Bjork, is what I imagine.
Yeah. No, it's a weird movie, but I also think like if you want to show up to see a muscly dude just roar at people and cut them in half, like this is your movie.
And you're tired of Batman.
And if you want to, right.
If you made it three quarters of the way through Batman.
And if you're just like, you know, I really would like, I would have liked Batman if only it were, I don't know, more art housey. Like this is your movie. Go fucking see this movie.
All right. The Northman.
I really enjoyed it, and I think if anything, it just proves to me like, man, we need more fucking Robert E. Howard. Like we need more Conan the Barbarian.
Right.
Yeah.
Cool. That's the thing. People don't realize. I mean, I mentioned that about the movie, but they don't realize how weird Conan himself is in those comics and stories.
Conan's fucking weird, man.
I mean, he fights some Lovecraftian kind of monsters.
Everything about Conan the Barbarian is weird, and I love Conan the Barbarian for that. He's so bizarre, and the stories he's in are real strange. And it's not like Conan the Barbarian is just like your straight man either. I mean, like, he's a weird dude. Nobody is violent and, like, that rageful.
Right.
And just that, like, because he gets himself into some weird fucking situations. And you kind of realize, like, Conan, why are you doing this?
There's a death wish involved, right?
Yeah. It's really, really interesting.
And as far as Vikings go, there actually was a death wish. They believed that if you don't die in battle, you don't get to dine in the Great Hall with Odin.
And this
Odin.
Movie steers like full on into a very rigorously, historically researched visual palette, right? Like
right.
Cool.
The costumes, the places that they're living, the stuff that you see kind of in the background, politics feels very authentic.
This isn't your father's Hamlet.
No, it's good.
So what's next? Nick Cage.
So this is the
finale.
This is the other one that he told me the title, and I just wrote Nick Cage.
Nick Cage was in a movie called Nick Cage.
The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent is
what a great
movie.
Title. I thought that was such a great title.
Such a phenomenal title.
Yeah, yeah.
And this movie is genuinely just joyous. It's funny because in a way it's kind of a meta commentary about Nick Cage and just about movie making in this age, right?
Yeah.
Where he has a conversation with his sidekick in this movie, who's played by the Mandalorian. What is his name?
Pedro Pascal.
Thank you, Pedro Pascal. He's talking to Pedro Pascal, and he's like, you know, it's difficult to get a movie made these days because if you're not a Marvel movie or you're not a Star Wars,
right?
Which is funny because Nick Cage played Ghost Rider, and Pedro Pascal is the fucking Mandalorian, right? He's like, if you're not in a Marvel movie or you're not, you know, in a Star Wars, where's your, you know, how do you build an audience? How do you connect with an audience? Audiences aren't just turning up for talking head comedies. There's got to be action. There's got to be a third act where there's like, you know, a lot of explosions and gunfire.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard for you to have a movie where it's just a couple of actors acting the shit out of their roles and like, you know, building these character driven moments.
Yeah.
And yet the movie itself is a character driven talking head comedy between Nick Cage putting in the performance of his lifetime. I mean, I think that there are better performances from Nick Cage, but this is certainly one of the most Nick Cagey performances.
Right.
Like very cognizant of a Nick Cage performance.
Self-aware.
Absolutely. Nick Cage. With Pedro Pascal, who I think is also a really interesting actor, who's just very charming. And these two characters are interacting in a script that is trying to be, you know, all of the things that they're kind of lamenting a script has to be. It's smart.
Sounds very meta.
It is very meta, but it's also very fun. Like, it's just so much fun to watch Nick Cage be Nick Cage.
Right.
It's so much fun.
As usual.
Yeah, and it's so much fun to watch him relating to this just very charismatic character played by Pedro Pascal.
It seems like it's got a little bit in common with the Birdman.
A little bit
actor reflecting on his career, but he's actually doing it.
There's a danger here, right? When you're a big name star like Michael Keaton and you do a role like Birdman, right? Or when you're a big name star like Nicolas Cage and you do a movie where you're kind of like acting the self-parody, right?
Yeah.
I don't know that there are a whole lot of actors out there that can do this with such a genuineness.
Right?
Yeah. Where they understand what the joke is, where the line is, and yet can still be earnest about their performance in a way that feels genuine to what this artist really is trying to say about his art, about his craft, about whatever it is.
It seems like you'd have to be good at putting your ego aside and not getting your feelings hurt, not taking things as a shot.
Like, yeah.
Because if you're the wrong kind of actor in this type of movie and everything's directed at you kind of, you know, I can imagine some people just freak out about it.
Yeah, there's no
like Jared Leto.
There's no Jared Leto. I was just going to say, there's no Jared Leto.
That guy can't make fun of himself.
No. Absolutely
impossible.
Could He could
then what would
That's
we
why
be
I
here?
Don't like him.
What would we be here for if he could?
Exactly.
I'm telling you, Jared Leto looks at the dailies of him going like, I want to make you a suit. and he looks at the dailies. He's like, that's a damn fine movie. You know, like, he's like really, he really believes that. Like, he really believes that he's the best.
He's still method acting, like, weeks after the movie wraps.
After the movie wraps.
I'm just going to be Italian for a few more months.
Don't you know, I'm a Jared Leto. I'm so Italian.
His girlfriend or whatever is like, Jesus, Jared, just fucking get it, though. Just
we
come
keep
on.
Going back to Jared Leto.
I don't know. I'm making assumptions here. I shouldn't. His significant other. How about that?
I don't know if he even has one.
His dog. There's too much. Jesus. Just drop the Italian accent.
There's too much ego. There are two things that will always get me riled up: Jared Leto and fucking Moonfall.
His dog is like rolling its eyes, and meanwhile, his goldfish is like, you know, I've got it better than you, dog. I can act like I'm stupid and just don't even hear the Italian accent.
I'm pretty sure.
The water kind of mutes it as it comes through to my ears.
I'm pretty sure in Moonfall, there's a
Jared
cat.
Jared Leto.
There's a cat named Fuzz Aldrin. I'm not even joking.
We have to stop going back to Moonfall.
I hate Moonfall.
We have to fight the urge to get. But what got us there is we're talking about egos. Yeah. We're talking about egos and actors. And you have to develop quite a bit in your career to get to the point where you can make Birdman or The Unbearable Weight of an enormous talent?
Massive talent.
Massive talent, yeah.
Yeah,
synonyms. I mean,
tremendous talent.
I really think Nick Cage, like, does this movie really well. He was talking about how resistant he was to do this script because he had it pitched to him multiple times. He was like, I don't know, it feels like it's too far for me, which I think is anything being too far for Nick Cage is hilarious,
laughable.
Yeah. But I will say, like, say what you will of Nick Cage's like weird manic performances. That dude puts in 150% every time he shows up.
Yeah.
It's the commitment that's
impressive.
He's
so committed. Yeah. And I truly believe that when Nick Cage goes into a movie, he throws himself wholeheartedly into that project.
Right.
Not because it's an ego thing, but I think that he understands, like, I am here to
this
work.
This makes me so
sad. I'm here
sad
to do this movie.
One of my favorite
that
movies.
But we did not get to see Nick Cage as Superman.
No. Oh,
you
man.
You know what?
That would have been.
As much as I rankle at the idea of a Nick Cage as Superman, the more I think about it, the more I'm kind of like, I'll watch it.
Yeah,
I'll watch it.
He did voice Superman in, I think, the Teen Titans Go to the Movies cartoon.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, which was really neat.
My kid constantly watches Teen Titans. Yeah.
Oh, it's really funny. Yeah.
My favorite Nick Cage movie was Matchstick Men.
I don't know if I've seen that
he
one.
He was a con
artist. I don't
know
artist. If I have either.
He and Sam Rockwell are con artists together, and then they end up turning on each other because they're con artists. But the whole movie was like, he's got like, was it obsessive compulsive disorder?
Right.
And he has to lock his door 5 times. He's just like buried in ticks that he can't control. And it makes you nervous the whole movie. But I thought that was really fitting for Nick Cage because he's kind of got this twitch about him anyway.
He's a weird dude for sure.
Yeah. But, you know, that's not one of his greater movies. Sam Rockwell does a lot of heavy lifting too.
Sam Rockwell. That
dude, stay weird, Nick Cage. Rules. Stay weird. That's all I can say.
I think this movie is like perfect. Like, Nick Cage is weird. And this movie is fun.
I've missed a lot of these movies in theater. Some of them are still there, and I'm going to try and catch what I can. But we actually have some big dates coming up. But
we got a lot of stuff going.
But I am at least thankful that it seems like more and more movies are hitting the streaming services and kind of coming to on demand and coming, you know, outside of the theater. It's not taking months and months for them to reappear. So I'm at least hopeful that I will get to see all of these on some medium at some point.
Yeah, same here.
Except for Morbius. I don't want
to
watch
that. I'm subscribed to HBO Max, and I feel like I can watch anything.
Yeah, Batman came quick to HBO Max after it got out of theater.
Right. Like, and we don't get paid by HBO to say that either.
No, we don't.
And we don't get paid by any of these movies to plug them.
But if you would like to plug us, if you'd like to pay us, then...
No butt plugs.
I was going to say,
no butt
plugs. If you
want
to plug us, I was like, yo!
Follow our Patreon. Come to our Patreon. We have some new tiers. We're building new tiers the entire time. All new merchandise, new exclusive content. We're just constantly building up our Patreon to reward those who want to follow us.
Also, come around to slayhouse.com. We've done a lot of work on the website to improve it. We've got some new stuff on there out for pre-order.
Karen Huff's Ground Control is available for pre-order, and I don't know when this is supposed to...
Is it out by this point?
You know, we just had this discussion on the Dashiell Hammett episode.
We just did this. It may be out now. And if it's out now, just buy it on slayhouse.com.
Yeah.
Just buy it.
It's the future by this point.
We've got...
when is this happening in the movie? Well, it's happening now.
We've also got another book that is by now, for sure, likely another
at least
pre-order.
Melpomene's Garden by Curtis Harrell. Mm-hmm. We have another anthology coming out. It'll be published by Halloween, but the submissions are coming this July.
Yeah. And then interested in submitting to us for Tales of Slayhouse 2022, I encourage you look for that window. That window opens starting on July 1st.
And if you're a student of creative writing, I believe from the most recent emails I've gotten, AWP is putting a piece of ours like for our open submission calls in their magazine. So that goes out to every creative writing program. So you can see that.
That's pretty cool.
That is pretty cool. We're about to leave here as the day of the recording. We've got a few more days before we head out to StokerCon.
We're definitely back by StokerCon by the time this comes out.
But yeah.
But
as of the recording, we're about to leave for StokerCon.
Right.
Listen to this.
We got
coffee mugs.
I just took a sip from a Slayhouse Publishing coffee mug.
So you can get a coffee mug as part of the merch that on different tiers through the Patreon. Supplies. But we're also going to be selling coffee mugs, I think, through the website and some other merch.
Yeah, supplies are limited. So if you would like to get a Slayhouse coffee mug, make sure you put in an order quickly before they sell out.
Yes.
These are sure to go.
There's no way to.
Sure to go fast.
Yeah. I haven't set up the order yet for them. As of the recording, but we're taking all of them four weeks out. Yeah, we are 4 weeks out. No, we're gonna sell them all at StokerCon.
Well, that's why I say supplies are limited.
Oh wow!
Get them now.
I mean, if they're a big seller, I'll order more. But you know,
supplies are limited. I don't know how limited they are.
Just you know,
they are limited.
You know.
Welcome to the multiverse of podcasting. We don't know which universe we're delivering this.
We're in the past talking
about
the
future. Either we've sold them all or they're
Seriously, we would like to thank our patrons. We would like to thank all of our followers on social media. You can follow us at SlayhouseLitBits and at Slayhouse on Twitter. We also have two Instagram accounts for each.
Working on Instagram.
We've got... we supposedly had TikTok, but I just don't understand TikTok.
I'm working on it.
I'm too old for TikTok.
We want to thank our
producers at Wayne Howard Studios. We have a ton of stuff coming out. Like, we got a ton of stuff preparing for this year. Not just books to read, but audio projects and just everything. So we're really, really excited about this. We want to thank everybody for your support. And I think that's about all we have to say for the movies, unless you guys have anything else.
I think we're good. I think we said everything.
Cancel Jared Leto.
Cancel
Jared Leto. Hashtag cancel Jared Leto.
And I put on the script that we'd each have our own personal sign-off, so I know I have one, but I'm sorry, guys. I'm taking this one. Yo!
Damn it. It was going to be mine.
I don't know. I didn't think of one. Take her easy and whatnot.
Be excellent to each other. And party on, dudes.
Party on.